You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Who was it, eh?
It's me and the bitch.
Hey.
Yo, it's me and the bitch.
Back with you, another edition of the Degenerate Hawkeyes podcast. Trent and Biz, as we talk Hawkeye football with you, fresh off an absolute whooping on the hands of the Iowa State Cyclones. Iowa goes to 2-0, and now the fifth-ranked team in the country, Biz. We had this, right?
Oh, happy day 2,559 to you, Trent. You have two children and my youngest child who have never, ever seen the Clones beat Iowa, and that's the way it should be. So what a glorious, glorious day, Trent.
Really is. From my outpost here in central Iowa, it has been beautiful. I've been smirking at people walking by. They got Cyclone plates. I give them a little head nod. Pulling up to him at a stoplight. It's been just absolutely glorious here. And the way the game played out, too. This wasn't flukiness. This wasn't Iowa getting the breaks. This wasn't a muff punt at the end of the game, anything like that. This was domination, and domination, once again, from the Iowa defense. That's where we got to start. That defense playing at an elite level.
Yeah. Well, Trent, before we break down the game, you can go you can go get a snack or rest for a while, because I don't think it does justice to just break down the game, Trent. But let's give me a few minutes if you could.
Okay.
We need to break down the day in general. You ready?
Yes.
So Trent, what I'm going to be talking about here are just straight facts. Nothing here is hyperbole. These are facts. Coming into that game on Saturday, you had an Iowa State team that was quite simply their best team ever. I think every Clone fan would agree with that. Best team ever. Best quarterback in school history. First team All-Americans at running back, middle linebacker, and tight end. 21 starters back. You had game day in town. You had the home field advantage and probably the biggest crowd in Jack Trice history. And this is the one maybe potentially not fact, Trent, but you also had the greatest coach in the history of coaching leading them into battle. So really things couldn't have looked any better for Iowa State going in. By the 10-minute mark of the fourth quarter, Trent, you know what had happened?
They're all leaving.
They've been trolled by the game day crew. They've been trolled by the Aflac quiz question. Their all-star quarterback had been benched. There was maybe, generously, 10,000 Iowa State fans still in the stands, and they were utterly embarrassed by the Hawks. And if you think utterly embarrassed is a dramatic term or is over the top, it's not, Trent. You know why? You know where I found that term at? I found it from the Wide Right and Natty Light website. If you're not familiar with that, which I hope you're not, because you hope you never get on it, but that is the Iowa State Twitter. Very popular, 26,500 followers. So very popular. Their title of their article for this game was Iowa State Utterly Embarrassed by Iowa. And I'll just finish it, Trent, with their last paragraph, because this is their statement, not mine. So it doesn't get any better than this paragraph. There really are no positives here. Iowa State got clowned by ESPN in College Game Day, only to get clowned on the field by the Hawkeyes. So There you have it, Trent. It doesn't get any better than that. Apparently, the Matt Campbell process is, I guess it's an 8 to 10 year process, because it certainly didn't work out on Saturday. And I think it's quite possible he may be Owen forever. I don't know your thoughts on it, but it would not shock me at all if he's not there a year from now.
Well, a lot of people already connecting dots with that. The USC job is open as Clay Helton has been fired. James Franklin, long been rumored to be a candidate for that job. Has his time come to an end at Penn State? And looking for that next destination. If that happens, Penn State opens. Is that a likely destination for Matt Campbell? I could certainly see that happening. I don't think it's a huge stretch. And while we're gloating a little bit here and having some fun, I got to give a shout out to my guy, Wade Looking Bill. Did you see his response to Brent Bloom over the weekend? Brent Bloom writes for Cyclone Fanatic. He works up at Iowa State University. He likes to put stats together. He likes to try to make numbers make sense for Cyclone fans out there. And he had this tweet, did Bloom. I was the fourth team in college football since 2016 to have 173 yards or less and win a football game. Turnovers and punting the difference. Wade Looking Bill, former Hawkeye basketball player, responds with this. Brent always has the best stats. Here's a stat. ISU is 0-6 versus Iowa the last six games. Didn't even have to do any research. Perfect. Wade Looking Bill, drop the mic there right in Bloom's face.
I saw the Bloom tweet. I did not see the response. That is pretty cut and dried, Trent. Like I said, everything I said is just straight facts. I mean, this is a team that had everything going their way going into the day. And by the start of the fourth quarter, it was literally, demoralizing for them. I mean, they were completely and utterly embarrassed, as their own website confirmed. So, not in a million years, Trent, could I have a – you couldn't have dreamt up a better scenario as an Iowa fan than what happened on Saturday, because – not only did we win, but we embarrassed them, and we left them as a fan base completely questioning what they're doing. And it's just as enjoyable as the win is listening to their fan base over the last 48 hours try to justify the loss, explain the loss. A few of the knowledgeable ones admit they just got their butts kicked. But some of the things you hear about how the game would have been totally different if it wouldn't have been for all the turnovers or all the special teams or all those other things. But, a lot of excuses, Trent, but I think we all know who the better team was on Saturday, and the realistic Clones fans know as well.
I think they do, but I heard it today on my radio show. I took a call from old friend Mike in Waterloo and said, if Hunter Deckers was just out there, thing would have been a lot different. Would have been a whole lot different, and it's rinse, repeat, recycle with Iowa State football. It doesn't matter who the coach is. It doesn't matter what the talent base is. They're already on to the backup quarterback. They're already moving on from their Brock Purdy all-time leader in wins, bowl wins. Took them to a conference championship game. He's always had a weak arm, but suddenly this is a huge, huge problem now. And now it's time for the big lefty from West Sioux, Haywarden, Hunter Deckers. It's incredible. It is a fan base, obviously different than any other. Biz, we talked about it last week. I have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis, but how quickly this thing has changed. But I guess when you've lost six straight, when Campbell still doesn't have a win, you're searching for answers. You're looking for anything, and that's kind of the easiest common denominator, right? Put in the backup.
Well, and Campbell, honestly, I mean, he's obviously feeding that beast a little bit by pulling Purdy. I mean, I was shocked when he took Purdy out of the game. Did Purdy play well? Absolutely not. But two out of three interceptions were not his fault. I mean, Xavier Hutchinson, that one bounced right off his hands. The other one's a tip ball. And the other one's a 50-50 ball. So it's not like all three of them, he threw them right to us. So did he play well? No. Did he look comfortable in the pocket ever? No. But, I mean, there's more to the story than what Campbell's leading on. I mean, I know he's saying the right things and saying Purdy's their guy, but I think he is going to be on a short leash the rest of the year. But, we can talk more about this later. But the fact of the matter is the Big 12 stinks so bad that they'll end up winning their nine games, and they'll have their great story about how, they came back and they got better throughout the year. It'll be the same stories they always get from them down the road.
It will be. And it will be, you know, if we play this game at the end of the season, how different this game would be. Not remembering that Iowa, that's also a program that plays pretty good football as the season goes on. But that's always remiss. It's always looked over. And the excuses will continue. What we do have, we got scoreboard 27-17 in a game that wasn't even that close. Biz, you ready to talk more about the game?
I am, yeah. You started talking defense, Trent, so let's start there. I mean, I know we talk about it every week, but what can you say about this defense? I mean, what they do week in and week out is absolutely phenomenal. They just – they're the most disciplined, well put – I mean, they're just – there's such a cohesive unit. They're just – there are no breakdowns. I mean – the 149-yard play at the end of the half, everybody, we talked about our testing, we're just shocked. Yeah. That never happened. That's just not Iowa football. And that's the one time it's happened in 2 weeks. I mean, they're just – you watch college football across the nation, there are very, very, very few teams that can do what Iowa does as far as just playing good, fundamental, disciplined defense, and it goes a long ways.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Watching what this defensive front has built into, it was a question mark coming into the year. And not just because where's the pass rush going to come from, but in terms of depth, they play 10 guys on Saturday, and all of them had moments. All of them had a point where you said, boy, he looks good. You got 10 dudes. Now, you can say you got 10 dudes, you really don't have a real rotation of six. That's all well and good. I think that's going to be pared down as the season goes on. But to do that in a hot environment, to go out there, play at that level, from what we saw from Joe Evans, Joey the Bull, 37 snaps, 9 pressures in the game. He was a top-ranked player on the defensive line of Pro Football Focus. Ethan Herkett, I said this earlier in the week. I don't remember. I feel like I remember every single guy that's recruited at Iowa. I remember nothing about this guy other than he got a scholarship. He played really well. Craig got the sack. Wagner was there. All over the place. And Zach Van Valkenburg has turned himself into not just a guy that right place, right time. He is a real defensive end now that can do everything for this squad. Depth, talent, this defensive line feels like they have it all.
Well, just across the defense, I think it was Scott Docterman's article. He had a couple paragraphs when Evans got more snaps than Wagner. So when you look at when Evans is in, look across the board at those 11 guys, Trent. You're looking at two walk-ons in Evans and Kerner. Mm-hmm. You're looking at 3 2-star guys in Riley Moss, Merriweather, and Benson. You're looking at a transfer from a Division II Hillsdale. And then you're looking at 4 3-stars in Campbell, Lee, Shannon, and Belton. And then you've got the one, I guess you'd say, star of the bunch in Justin Jacobs, the 1 4-star. Yeah. I mean, that is incredible when you talk about that. I mean, you're talking about more than half the defense are either 2 stars, walk-ons, or Division II transfers. And you're looking at quite possibly the best defense in the nation. I mean, that's a credit to not only Phil Parker, but a credit to the whole coaching staff on obviously being able to find hidden gems out there and then develop them better than anybody else in the nation.
Justin Jacobs, that play in the forced fumble. And people look at the fumble part of it, and he popped it out. Hey, great for him. Brees Hall, is he going to fumble again in that scenario? Probably not. But Jacobs made the play. But what he did to Chase Allen. Chase Allen, if he's going to play in the league, it's going to be because he can block. He's huge. He's 6'7". He's powerful. And Justin Jacobs absolutely tossed him around like a rag doll to get off that block. Get off the block where Allen got to him first. The strength that he has, the athleticism sideline to sideline, this linebacker group, this is elite. Defensive back group is elite. The defensive line, as he talked about. But Jacobs alone making that kind of play, completely changing the game around it and really putting it away at that point at 21-10. That dude has got a bright, bright future. And you get those kind of building blocks to go along with all the guys, the can try guys that are doing it right, you really got something there. Phil Parker, we continually sing his praises, but it's incredible how an SEC team hasn't come in and said, here's $3 million a year, fix us. Please fix us.
Yeah, and the thing is, you never even really hear, maybe you hear it over there, but I've never even heard a rumor of him leaving in the last 10 years. There hasn't been a single, he's up for this job or that he's in the final three of this job. I mean, maybe that's as simple as he does not throw in his hat in the ring and just has no interest in leaving. But it's pretty amazing that he hasn't at least had some feelers out there to go to, go fix LSU's defense or Tennessee's defense or something like that. But I think now, hopefully, he's old enough now where, maybe it's too late. Maybe at this point he wants to stay here and he'll stay here until. So Kirk calls it quits and they'll stop together. That would be, that'd be ideal.
Go out together and go out with a few really good teams, let's hope, coming forward here in the future. So defense is great. We sing their praises. Let's go to the offense. And the second quarter, Spencer Petras, he looked great. Overall, the numbers are not there. Didn't have to the way the game was being played. But that second quarter, some of those throws on a dime, standing in the pocket knowing he was going to take one in the chops and firing the football, that's, I know, where the excitement still lies. Because in terms of arm talent, he's got that. Certainly has the arm talent to make all the throws. There's the other part, though, that goes along with it. Let's start at quarterback. Your thoughts on Petras?
Yeah, I mean, I have the same thoughts as everybody else. One good quarter, three really bad ones. And, I'll give him credit. His ability to go from looking terrible to great with the flip of a switch is pretty amazing. I mean, it reminded me of the Illinois game last year, but fortunately we didn't fall behind 14-0. But he was atrocious the first quarter against Illinois, and then he flipped the switch and was great, great the rest of the way. Obviously that didn't happen on Saturday, but he was great that second quarter. I mean, the one drive was 5 for 5 for 71 yards, and three of those passes were absolute lasers. I mean, he has the arm strength, he has the talent, but I mean, his complete inability to move in the pocket is a big concern. I mean, if he has to move at all in the pocket, he's in big trouble. He doesn't sense pressure very well. He doesn't slide over and buy himself time. He doesn't step up in the pocket very well. Those are types of things, unfortunately, I don't think you can probably fix midseason. So he is what he is, Trent. But, to me, certainly the last thing we should be doing is complaining about this team because they're 2-0 and doing great. But, there's concerns across the board to me on this offense. I mean, I thought Tyler Goodson looked average at best on Saturday. He looked very timid for some reason. I'm not sure why. And then you got your two veteran wide receivers, Tracy and Rodania, have basically been non-existent so far. So, it's not just Spencer Petras. It's across the board, your veteran offensive players, none of them have. And then Laporta hasn't played very well either. He's had, what, three drops in 2 weeks? So across the board, those are all things I think we can improve upon. But what are your thoughts on Goodson? He did not look like the same running back Saturday as we've grown accustomed to.
So when I watched it in real time, I thought the exact same thing. I thought he was tentative at a time. I didn't think he was reading blocks very well. And then when I watched it for a second time on Sunday night, it wasn't as bad as I initially thought. Looking at things, that just wasn't a ton there. That offensive line, I think more than anything, that's where the issues lie. The offensive line and the way Iowa State plays defense, it's very similar to what Wisconsin does with those linebackers and safeties come slanting in. It's very difficult schematically for what Iowa does, and I think they're going to have to scheme better against Wisconsin coming up. That's a later conversation in the year. But as it pertains to that, I think more than anything, it's not so much a Tyler Goodson problem. I think it's an offensive line problem first and foremost. Ivory Cullen Martin came in, ran hard a couple of times. He had a couple of opportunities, lost the ball, but he was down, on and on and on there. I'm not as concerned, I don't think, as you are with Goodson. And remember, they played two, I think at minimum, top 20 defenses here in the first 2 weeks. Things are going to look a lot better, and it's going to start this week against Kent State.
And concern is probably the wrong word for Goodson also. It's more surprising, I guess. And
sure.
I thought
sure.
one of the things he had done really well is understanding. He'd gotten so much better at when the play's not there, he just kind of has been putting his head down and getting the 3 yards. And he didn't do that at all. Mm-hmm. He just kind of he'd go sideways and get zero. And, you know, it's some of the same bad habits I thought he had kind of early on, you know, back a couple of years ago, where he was always looking for the home run. And, you know, I'm hoping it's one of those things where I think across the board, this offense is going to be angry on Saturday. And that's the best thing about this is I don't see any way this team takes Kent State or Colorado State for granted. I just think you've got an offense that's going to want to prove some things these next couple of weeks. They want to prove that they're not as inept as – they're not the 126th ranked offense or whatever they are right now. I mean, and like you said, I mean, give credit to two really good defenses. I mean, has the offense looked great? No, but they've also gone up against quite possibly the two best defenses we'll face all year.
Special teams, what can we say that hasn't already been said? Torrey Taylor's a stud. Charlie Jones, an absolute stud. Special teams, LeVar Woods. Speaking of next head coaches, a lot of people are looking through. When Kirk finally hangs it up, who would be the guy? Special teams coaches that become head coaches have had a really good track record, John Harbaugh being the most famous example of that. LeVar Woods, what he has done with these special teams and what he continues to do year after year, it's incredible.
It wins games. I mean, it's as simple as that. And, you know, Iowa football, you go back and look, you know, when we were turning the corner, those 2002, 2003, 2004 years, we were unbelievable defensively and special teams. And that's what – and then for whatever reason, we got away from that a little bit. We were average at best for special teams for probably a decade there. But what LeVar Woods has done – and just little things. One of the things I absolutely love is – just little things like Iowa State a couple times went rugby-style punt. And when they did that, we were ready and brought in a second returner. Max Cooper was in as the short guy so that they couldn't drop it in and let it roll. And just little things like that, you know, we're just really well prepared across the board on special teams. And you know, we haven't, you know, a couple years ago you saw all the trick plays and everything. We haven't done any of that, but I bet we've got some trick plays. He's got a few trick plays up his sleeve for potentially teams like Penn State or Wisconsin as well. It wouldn't surprise me to see another one get pulled out at some point this year.
Yeah, we can get Wisconsin back for the 2010 fake punt and return the favor up in Camp Randall coming up later this year. Biz, this is a team that is right now fifth in the AP poll, seventh in the coaches poll. I didn't think this team was getting to this point. And even if you said they start in 2-0, I never would have imagined that they'd be this high already. So you put Stat Boy to work this week. Top five rankings, what do you have?
Yeah, it's interesting, Trey. I'll just ask you up front here. How many weeks do you think we have been ranked top five in the history of Iowa football?
Top five, all right. Going through 85. I'm going to just guess. 35.
Now you're pretty close. 40 weeks.
All right.
This is our 41st week. But when you go back through and you break it down, Trent, the vast majority of those weeks were either when you and I were in elementary school or not born. So when you look at the numbers, you realize just how rare of an accomplishment this is and how much we need to enjoy it here the next few weeks. So. Let's break it down, Trent. You want to break down the 40 weeks of a top five Iowa football teams?
I'm going to guess we're going to go back to the Evie days to kick things off, right?
Yes and no. So we're not technically going to go in chronological order. We're going to go by the most successful season. So just in general, of the 40 weeks when we've been ranked in the top five, Iowa's record as a top five team is 27-12-1. The year that we had by far the most wins as a top five team, 1985.
Okay.
We were in the top five for 11 straight weeks. Obviously, we were number one for a few weeks until Ohio State knocked us off. But even after that loss, we stayed top five all the way through the rest of the year until the Rose Bowl. So we went 9-2 that year. So a quarter or a third of our wins as a top five team happened all in 1 year, 1985. So, but then, yes, we'll go back to the Evie years, and it's truly amazing what Forrest Evashevsky did for a five-year stretch. So the interesting thing when you look at this, back in the 50s and 60s, Trent, they did what they probably should do now. They didn't have rankings at the start of the year. They waited a few years. Mm-hmm. So that hurts his number of weeks that he's ranked. But from 1956, 57, 58, 60, and 61, we were ranked in the top five multiple weeks during those 5 years. In 56, we ended number three. 58, we ended number two. 60, we ended number three. In those 5 years combined, we went 15-4-1. So there you've got 24 of our 27 wins when you just add up those seasons. And the most amazing thing about Forrest Evashevsky, Trent, in 1961, he leaves a number one team to Jerry Burns. Jerry Burns starts the year 3-0 and then loses four in a row, and they weren't ranked for 20 years after that. So it took Jerry Burns all of a month to destroy what Forrest Evashevsky had built.
I remember Jerry Burns. I remember him as the Vikings coach, and I'll tell you, it doesn't really surprise me.
So the other years that we were top five, you've got only one other year where we've been in the top five for multiple weeks. That would be 2015. We were in the top five for a total of 2 weeks, the last week of the regular season and then the Big Ten championship game, and then we dropped back to number six going into the Rose Bowl. So 2 weeks, 1-1 there. And then the other 5 years, 1954, 1959, 1983, 1984, and 2002, we jumped into the top five and then immediately lost. So the 2002, we finally made it to the top five when we got to the Orange Bowl and lost. I don't remember the 83 or 84 years, but Statboy sent me the information. In 83, we got to the top five and then got destroyed 33-0 by Illinois. In 84, we jumped into the top five early in the year and lost to Penn State 20-17. So when you look at the numbers, Trent, it's pretty amazing. Assuming we can beat Kent State and Colorado State, it will only be the second time since 1960 that we're going to have multiple wins as a top five team, and the Jeez. First time in 36 years. So as adults, Trent, you and I have seen Iowa football win one game as a top five team. That was the season finale at Nebraska in 2015. That's it. That's the only top five victory you and I have ever probably seen. The other ones were probably out running around in the backyard in the 80s. So
probably listening on the radio.
That's it, Trent. Yeah. One win in 36 years. So the moral of the story is enjoy it. Enjoy a top five team and hopefully a top five team that can stay there for a little while.
And I will throw this PSA out along with it. Enjoy it, but be prepared because now ranked in the top five, there's going to be a lot more scrutiny that's also going to come along with it. And it's not going to be just you and me and everybody else complaining about Spencer Petras. It's going to be coming at a national level. And the offensive ranking that you brought up, those kind of things, be prepared. Don't get butthurt about it. It's going to happen. Just enjoy our team. 2015, looking back, I wish I just would have enjoyed it even more instead of the times that I got too defensive about it from the national talking heads.
Yeah, well, the advantage we have this year, Trent, compared to then, the 2015, the big thing was our schedule. Sure. And everybody was like, who have they played? Mm-hmm. And that was the big talking point. You know, this year we've got the advantage, as long as Indiana and Iowa State don't fall flat on their face, if both of those two end up being, you know, consistent, you know, Indiana, if they can go 8-4 and Iowa State can go 9-3, we're going to have some good wins in our resume. But, you know, you got to take care of business when it comes to the Kent State and Colorado State yeah. world. Don't beat Kent State, don't beat Kent State 24-17 because that gives everybody a reason to question you. So take care of business these next couple weeks, and then we'll see what happens come October.
All right, so we got through that top five rankings from Stat Boy. Anything else from Stat Boy? Are we going to Mr. B now?
Well, it's a combination of Mr. B and Stat Boy. It came from the brain of my dad, because anytime you start talking really old school comparisons. You got to look to the elder generation for that stuff, Trent. But it's his brainchild. But then the research, is, as always, was done by Stat Boy.
Stat Boy did the research, but from the minds of Paul Bisgaard, I am ready for this.
Well, late in the game, my dad commented that this team reminds him a lot of Hayden's first Rose Bowl team, which ironically was 40 years ago. So I figured it's a good time to get in the time machine and go back 40 years and kind of look at that team from 1981. And when you look at it, there are a lot of easy comparisons to make. So you're ready to hop in the time machine and go back to what would you have been? One?
I was one. Yeah, I was in diapers at the time. Let's see what we got.
All right, so 1981 team, Trent. It was the original live and die by defense and special teams. That team, they won seven games. They held seven opponents to 7 points or less, and they beat some really good teams. They beat number five, number six, and number seven ranked teams in Nebraska, Michigan, and UCLA. And when you look at the numbers, that defense, Trent, has some names you'll remember. It's got Andre Tippett, Mark Bortz, Pat Dean, Mel Cole, Bobby Stoops as a safety, and then Lou King at cornerback. And then they had quite possibly the all-time greatest punter in college football history, in Reggie Roby. Do you remember what he averaged per punt that year?
Was that the year that it was like 53 or something like that?
49.8 for the year. So, and the funny thing is, looking at it, that boy found the year before in 80, not only was he our punter, he was our field goal kicker.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing those stories.
The year before, he kicked 28 extra points and 11 field goals. But then Tommy Nickel came in and was a young freshman kicker in 81. But you look at the numbers, pretty amazing, Trent. They beat Nebraska with a total of 191 yards. So quite similar to the Iowa State. They beat Michigan with a total of 280 yards. And then they beat UCLA with a total of 57 passing yards on the day. The amazing stat, the UCLA game, UCLA was ranked sixth coming in. The second half of that game, we held the ball for over 23 minutes. So it was ball control offense and defense and special teams. So, but that season, the other comparison on the concerning part, great defense, great special teams like this year, also some shaky quarterback play. You ready to look at the quarterback numbers for that team?
Let's take a look. What did Gordy Bohannon do?
Well, Gordy split time. It was Gordy and Pete Gales. Ironically, they both threw for 50.7% completion rate. 50.7. So not real good. They combined for 7 touchdowns and 10 interceptions on the year, and they combined for slightly over 1,400 yards passing in 12 games. So the moral of the story is, Trent, it could be worse than Spencer Petras. I'm certainly hoping he at least avoids a negative touchdown interception rate and throws for over 1,400 yards on the year.
Let's hope, because going to a Rose Bowl, this team going to a Rose Bowl, if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, but right now his percentage passing is about identical. I think he's right at 50%, isn't he?
Perfect.
Yeah, you don't see that much in college football anymore. With all the dinking and dunking passing anymore, 50% is not good. But that's your time machine for 1981. You had a team that at the end of that year, Tippett and Roby were both named first-team All-Americans, and then four other defensive guys, Mel Cole, Mark Bortz, Lou King, and Pat Dean, were all first-team Big Ten. So you had five all-first-team Big Ten defensive players. And then you had, obviously, a first-team All-American punter. So a lot of similarities. Let's hope one of the other similarities is that you end in the Rose Bowl, or maybe even better.
College football playoff. That's where the dreams go, but we got a long, long season in front of us. Well, thanks to Mr. B for our listeners, not from Osage. He was, he is your dad, of course, but he was our elementary school principal growing up, and him and our PE teacher, Mr. Mayer, they were the ones that got me addicted to gambling. So thanks to both of them, as fantasy baseball started as a fourth grader for me in 1988. So I'll blame those guys as it pertains to my addictions.
In the old cafeteria at the elementary school.
The Knutson brothers teamed up for a team, and they tried to draft Kirby Puckett as a third baseman because he played an inning there. There was all kinds of hijinks that were happening back then.
And Doug Schwab, the wrestling coach, would sit in the back of the room and get everybody angry because he bit at the last second all the time. So it was quite the group. And honestly, my dad was probably the original stat boy. Mm-hmm. If you go to our house, you can see recruiting notebooks from like the 1980s where he would jot down who we recruited and whether they made it all the years and everything. So some point in time, you have to swing by and check it out. He still got it going back to, I think, the 70s. So he was ahead of his time when it came to being a recruiting nerd.
And then Stat Boy took over in the stat part of it, and here we are today. Well, thanks to Mr. B. Thanks to Stat Boy, as always. Good stuff out of them as we go down in the look at the time machine back another week. Biz, ready to make some picks this week? I need some help because after I was beating my chest in week one, it did not go very well in week two.
You go 0-3?
I went 0-3.
Oh, I think I went 1-1-1, so you can't. Just right in the meaty part of the curve, Trent.
That's right. Well, after the first week, hey, you're above 500, so the tee box is yours. Let's start this week with the Hawkeyes. They are currently favored in a weird number, 22.5. Now, if you're looking at some lines before the season, could have got it a little bit better, but currently we're playing the line as it is. Hawkeyes favored by 22.5.
Hey, don't try to waver back and forth on this one. I generally just like 56.5 seems like an insane amount of points for an Iowa football game. But so I really wanted to go under. But then I went and looked at Kent State's game against A&M. They gave up almost 600 yards to A&M. A&M turned the ball over five times, and they still won by 31 points. So I think this is a game, and A&M had 300 yards rushing as well. So I think this is a game where a rare game where Iowa puts the pedal to the metal and really tries to put on a showing here. So give me the 22.5, and I think we cruise to a let's go with a 42-14 victory.
I'm in the same line of thinking as you. I think the defense, they're just going to give up some plays. This team can move the ball. Crum's a nice quarterback. They'll make some plays offensively. I do think that the Iowa offense, though, is going to wake up in a big-time way. Just going to be one of those kind of happy-feeling type of games where Iowa's offense back in control. They're running the ball. Petras is making some throws. We'll get to see Padilla halfway through the fourth quarter. Kent State, they, in fact, may be more concerned before the season than they do right now. Yeah, I'll lay the 22.5. Give me the Hawks to cover in the first game. Our national game of the week, it is Auburn making their way up to State College. Biz, we've had a couple of trips out there. Some really fun. Well, they're always really fun. Some games really fun. Some not so much. Penn State favored by just shy of a touchdown, currently at 6. The total 53.5 is. You love those totals. I do in this game. I like the under here. I think this is destined for 24-17, something along those lines. I'm going to go under the 53.5.
I learned my lesson last week, Trent. My lock of the week was going against Penn State. I thought Ball State would give them a game, and so I kind of was peeking at that game from time to time, and Penn State just absolutely throttled them. And so you look at Auburn, you really have no clue. They played Akron and Alabama State, but new coach, I just don't think Bo Nix is a very good quarterback. I think you're going to have a whiteout at night, and I think Penn State's a pretty darn good football team. So give me Penn State -6. Again, not a great feel on this one. It's one that if it wasn't our game of the week, I would stay away from it entirely. But give me Penn State -6. I think with the whiteout conditions and Auburn hasn't played anybody and hasn't had to go on the road, I think they may be a little shell-shocked. And so give me Penn State -6.
Laying the 6 with the Nittany Lions. We finish up each week with our best bet. What's jumping off the board here for you on a Tuesday?
I gave you a teaser earlier, Trent, when I talked about how Iowa State's going to be fine because the Big 12 stinks. So I really, really wanted to go Nebraska +22 because I just don't think Oklahoma's as good as everybody pretends they are. Mm-hmm. But then I realized I can't trust Scott Frost. So I'm going against the other Oklahoma school instead. Oklahoma State's got to go to the Blue Turf up in Boise. Oklahoma State's just not a very good football team. They barely beat Missouri State. They barely beat a Tulsa team that lost to a FCS team the week before. Boise's always plays well on the blue turf. So give me the Broncos minus four.
Broncos minus four, Boise State on the blue turf against Okie State. All right, we wrap things up here with my best bet of the week and a couple of directions that I'm liking leaning right now. It's early in the week. That maybe makes it difficult. At least that's my excuse here. But I'm going to go with Nevada, making their way to Manhattan, the Little Apple, to take on Kansas State. Skylar Thompson, when he plays for Kansas State, they're really good. When he doesn't, they're really bad. Nevada, in fact, the Wolfpack are favored in this game. Old friend Jay Norvell, give me the Wolfpack minus 1.5. We'll not go with that crappy NC State Wolfpack this week. We'll use a different one, and we're going to pull in a win.
Well, you're 0-1 on Wolfpack picks, so hopefully you can even it out after this week.
Let's hope for the best. All right, Biz, before we...
What was your bet on the Iowa State game last week? I thought you picked the Hawks.
No, I said I was staying with what I thought all summer long and going with Iowa State, and, you know, more than anything, maybe... Giving a little stink. We know how my picks went last year.
Way to take one for the team, Trent.
That's right. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Let's do it here with Biz's Beat.
Hey, kids. Gather around for Biz's Beat of the day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the day.
Trent, Biz's Beat of the week is, you probably already knew this. Most Iowa fans already knew this. But Holly Rowe is a national treasure. I mean, I don't know if you paid attention throughout the week, but, you know, just how cool she was throughout the week. She got multiple requests from Iowa State and Iowa beat writers to do podcasts with a couple of the female writers for Iowa and Iowa State. She immediately jumped on both of those. She was pretty much everywhere. She clearly has kind of an affinity for the Iowa football program, going back to 2002 as well, but I assume you've seen it, but her post-game interview with Ferentz and how she teed it up for him to get a little emotional and to kind of tee him up and get him to agree that, hey, you know, Iowa's still here. Iowa State can get all the publicity. They can win the offseason all they want. But the fact of the matter is we're the better program. And we showed it on Saturday, and Holly Rowe kind of put a bow on the whole weekend by setting Kirk Ferentz up. There's nothing better than an emotional Kirk Ferentz. So thanks to Holly Rowe for teeing it up and letting Kirk hit it out of the ballpark.
Absolutely. 2004 jumps to mind afterwards and the emotions of Kirk in that 6-4 win against Penn State. And just there's something about that guy and his emotions, the way that it comes out. He's a tough guy, but he also shows his emotion. Easy to like. And Holly Rowe, tip of the ball cap, great work out of her. Seemingly, as always, she does, as it's in a difficult job. Sideline reporter is not easy. She's the best in the business, no doubt about it, at the college scene, and she is excellent. Biz, well done.
Well, and the best thing you realize when you see the emotional appearance, the best thing that ever happened to the Iowa program, Trent, is that Iowa State and Minnesota and Nebraska went out and got these cocky young coaches, because it's energized parents. You can see he has absolutely no love lost for Matt Campbell, PJ Fleck, and Scott Frost. We talked about last week what they've done over the last 5 years as a program is really impressive, and I think you're kind of seeing the it all come to fruition at this point. It's, you know, and fortunately the nation's seeing that as well, because to me, this top five feels different than that 2015 top five. You talked about it earlier. 2015, it kind of felt like we were riding the wave, but we weren't that great of a team. This team's got a chance to be special. Are they there yet right now? Absolutely not. But if they can stay healthy, get a few breaks, and keep improving, there's no reason the team can't stay in the top five for a while, Trent. Enjoy it, but let's change the expectations a little bit this week, too. Let's not only enjoy it, but kind of expect it a little bit.
And I was told in no uncertain terms this week, it was very easy for the Iowa coaches to have the guys ready to go. Of course, it's a rivalry game. But what happened 2 years ago when Matt Campbell, they used that trick play early to score against Iowa, and he's staring down the Hawkeye sideline and saying they think they're so blanking smart. That did not sit very well in the Iowa's coach's office, and that one will never be forgotten. Kirk doesn't forget anything anyway. That one, though, always at the top of his mind when Iowa State week comes.
Yeah, I was shocked, Trent. I was praying and hoping when we got, it was 24-10, when we gave the ball to Monty Pottibaum and he got down to the two, I really wanted to see the right back to the well again. And I really wanted Brian Ferentz to just stick it down their throat with either a fullback or just multiple QB sneaks at that point. But I was kind of shocked he didn't. I thought we would just go straight fullback dive and get it in the end zone. But that would have been the ultimate kind of FU to Campbell and the staff at that point. We gave it to Pottibaum a couple times, but it would not have broken my heart to see him get the ball five or six times that fourth quarter.
Just shove it in one more time. Biz, we will be back next week to talk about it more. Appreciate it as always, and get us out of here.
All right, go Hawks.